Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome, folks. We're going to go back to our conversation, but we're going to take a look at what's happening at the Republican National Convention. We have with us in the studio Duane Wickham, who is a newly appointed chair of Morgan State University's Department of Communication Studies, of course, founder and past president of the National Association of Black Journalists, columnist for USA Today, author of several books, including Bill Clinton and Black America and Fire at Will. We'll be right back with a conversation with him and perhaps James Liu from BET. We hope we get in touch with him as well. First, we have to turn this over to WEAA traffic to check on the roads in metropolitan Baltimore. And if you don't live in metro Baltimore, well, just put up with our traffic. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. On our way to our conversation, I'll remind you the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Mortgage Program, a community lending initiative of the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. If you're a first or second-time home buyer looking for a home in Baltimore, they even have down payment money for you. 1-800-638-7781. The Maryland Mortgage Program, 1-800-638-7781. Or go to steinershow.org and click on their banner. We're about to take a brief look here at what's going on in Tampa with the Republican National Convention. We have Duane Wickham in the studio, who I have not seen for years, but he's now chair of the Morgan State University's Department of Communication Studies, founder and past president of the National Association of Black Journalists, columnist for USA Today, author of many books, including Bill Clinton and Black America and Fire at Will. And Duane, great to see you again, and welcome to the studio, and welcome to Morgan State University.
Good to be here. Good to be here. Good to be in the studio. Good to be at Morgan.
It is great to have you here. This is great.
Thank you.
So you were there, ducking for cover, I guess, now and then.
Well, I'm back from the front line, from the front lines of American politics, yeah. The Republicans are in Tampa. It's an amazing sight to see all those Republicans running about in a city that has a Democratic mayor, and every member of the city council is an elected Democrat. But it makes for good political drama to see them there. And it's very heavily scripted. You know, this is, as we said off mic, this is not Abe Lincoln in 1860 trying to win on the third ballot. This thing is a four. In fact, right before I walked in, they finished the delegate vote, and now Romney is no longer the presumptive candidate. He is the official standard bearer of the Republican Party for the 2012 presidential election.
So now, you were there just for a day, but you followed this up very closely, obviously, and I'm curious what your sense of it is. I mean, we talked with folks from the convention yesterday. We'll be doing more of that on Thursday. We'll have people from Tampa here, from many stations around the country, which will be joining us to talk about what they've seen there. But this convention is interesting. I mean, they're saying that this convention will have the smallest number of black delegates and delegates of color of any Republican convention in almost 15 years.
Well, you won't notice that from what you see on camera.
Because you know who they're going to focus on, right?
Well, listen, they have re-scripted this whole thing. I actually got into the place and I saw the layout. And what they've done this time, and I've been to every political convention since 1988. This one is different. And it's different visually, because what they've decided is that they need to have a false front. And the false front they're creating, they're bringing – in the past, all the non-voting delegates, those who represent American territories that have no electoral college votes, American Samoa, the Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico, they sat way in the rafters.
Oh, no.
Not so this time.
Uh-huh.
When you tune in tonight, what you'll see is that they're front and center. They're right up front because they want to create this false image of inclusion. The Republican Party is really a pup tent that claims to be a big tent. And they want to give that big tent image today, but it's truly still a pup tent.
So what is it – when you were there, what were you doing? Who were you covering? Who were you talking to?
Well, I was talking to delegates. And you can see in my column today in USA Today, I picked up on some of the delegate voices, one of whom interestingly said that Romney is a Christian, and she wants a Christian in the White House this time. And she said, Romney is an American, and she wants an American in the White House this time. So they still, you know, the Republican Party is breathing its last breaths.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. The party we see today is if it succeeds, and let's hope it doesn't succeed in what it's trying to do, it really is the forerunner of an American apartheid. It really is almost a literally all white party, a literally white party. It's made up of strange bedfellows, Christian conservatives, and Mormons. There's nothing strange about being a Mormon or a Christian conservative, except that Christian conservatives consider Mormons on any other day
in
Christians. Any other year. Not only not to be Christian, but to be a cult, members of a cult. But they'd rather have a leader of a cult as their president than the black man who now inhabits the White House. So it's a different kind of America. We come to this election at a point when the nation is moving rapidly toward the day when America will be majority minority. It will truly be a melting pot nation. And this Republican Party wants to forestall that event. They want to forestall that event in a political sense by all of their tactics to limit the ability of people to vote, certain people to vote. They want to forestall that event with all of their tactics to limit who can come in this country, this immigration reform issue that they're talking about. And so they're trying to hold off what demographers tell us is inevitable.
So one of the things that strikes me that in this election, there was a poll that we've been focusing on, we'll be doing shows about over the next couple of weeks, that was done by Suffolk University. I don't know if you've seen it yet, but it was a poll of unlikely voters. And this year they say it's up from 80 to 90 million people who will not vote in this election. And that a poll of unlikely voters said that of those both registered and unregistered unlikely voters, 43% of those would have voted for Barack Obama. 23% said they would have voted for a third party. And 14% said they would have voted for Mitt Romney. And you talked about the party of tomorrow and that you think the Republicans are. But I think that this poll says a great deal about where people who may have voted for Barack Obama, may have voted against Republicans in any other way, are feeling completely disenfranchised and dislocated in America. They're not even bothering to vote.
Maybe disenchanted more than disenfranchised.
The Democrats
have a problem, and you've just pointed to it. They talk about it late at night when not many other people are around. It's called the enthusiasm gap. There's an enthusiasm gap. Nobody wants to admit to it. Everybody wants to downplay it. This president came into office with a lot of support among people who had previously felt that they were disenfranchised and had risen to a level of political participation not seen before, with great expectations. And one of the things that happens when you bring new people into the process, they don't understand the process. They expect a quick result, a quick fix. That's part of the problem. I think another part of the problem, quite honestly, we have to speak to this, is that the administration made some mistakes. You have to say that. It made some mistakes. Honestly, I have to say it made some mistakes. And I'm not talking about how it constructed itself.
Mm-hmm.
When Bill Clinton went into the White House, during his 8 years, the gap between white unemployment and black unemployment closed to the smallest level that it had ever been before or since. Was it because Bill Clinton consciously said, I'm going to do this? I don't think so. But it was probably because he put Alexis Herman in as Secretary of Labor. He put Rodney Slater in as Secretary of Transportation, Hazel O'Leary in as Secretary of Energy. They all had some significant impact on employment policies in the country. I remember having lunch one day in the private dining room of the Secretary of Labor, Alexis Herman, and having her tell me how she told labor unions that they would not have the support of the Clinton administration if they did not create real apprenticeship opportunities for blacks and other minorities to get jobs and to enter unions. And Rodney Slater talking to him about how the road building contracts, you know, that are constantly in place. And he told road construction companies, you know, if you guys can't find minorities to work on these road construction projects, you won't get the contracts. I'm not sure those kind of people are in place today in the Obama administration. And as well-intended as the president is, he cannot be everywhere, you know. And he likes to say, or maybe he doesn't like to say, but he says he's not the president of Black America. On one level, I understand that, but I don't think the people who voted for him understand that. Throughout the history of this country, we've always talked about to the victors go the spoils. Mm-hmm. But this time around, not so much.
Well, I think a lot of people were kind of – that is part of this kind of enthusiasm gap, as you call it, that President Barack Obama did disappoint a lot of people, whether it was not tackling the banks as hard as he could have tackled the banks in terms of rebuilding America, not pushing his agenda, not doing a Reagan-esque kind of leap over Congress and right to the American people to say we're going to do something very different. And also when his appointments, it was shocking, went more to Wall Street, less to the kind of other economic thinkers, not as many Black folks inside the White House or in the administration than Clinton.
Only one Black in his cabinet.
Right.
But now here's the other side. Now, I gave you that side. The other side is from the moment he walked into the White House, the Republican Party said,
right,
we will not let this guy get reelected. And that wasn't just a declarative statement of political intransigence. What that really meant on their part, we will take hits in our own community. We will allow bad things to happen across this nation to make sure he does not get reelected. And they've done that. It truly is the party of no. So he's confronted with his own, I think, bad decision-making, relatively speaking, but also he's confronted with an intransigent political opposition that was willing in almost a Taliban kind of human bomb kind of way, willing to take hits and suffer disastrous results within their own communities to see this man not get a second term.
So one of the things you said earlier was, and you're looking at the analysis of things, is that you even kind of said that the Republicans could win this, because this could be a very close election.
Yeah,
this is no guarantees that Barack Obama is going to get a second term. And if they do win, people will argue that they might even get the Senate, which would mean Mitch McConnell would be the new Senate leader. You would probably get Cantor as a new speaker and throw Bonner out. You'd have this world that would be extremely different even than we have now.
If the Republicans win the White House, they'll take it all.
Right. Right.
I mean, that's if they win the White House, they'll have the momentum to take the Senate as well. The key states to watch: Ohio, Virginia, Pennsylvania, Florida, very important states. North Carolina looks like it's more than trending toward Romney now. But Romney, listen, no Republican has ever won the White House without winning Ohio, and right now Romney's trailing in Ohio.
But those are also the states where they've had Republican governors, especially in the North, where they've disenfranchised a lot of voters, voters of color, young voters, senior citizens. Those are states that the Voting Rights Act does not cover.
Yes.
So these are very critical pieces.
And states which have passed laws that, in fact, restrict the ability of Blacks and other minorities to get to the polls and cast a ballot. That all said, the challenge is now, you know, and this battle, we can't fight this battle with people who don't vote. You
right.
talked about the numbers of people
who
won't participate. This battle has to be fought. This is a battle that we fought, as George Bush once said, by the army of the willing. It will take an army of the willing to fight this battle. And so those who do vote have to come out in great numbers. It will be a setback that will not be a four-year setback. If Barack Obama loses and the Republicans seize the Senate, and then they are able to foist upon America their hard right-wing social agenda, this will be a setback that will be a decade in the making.
I think you're right. And Duane Wickham, first of all, again, I really congratulate you on coming here as chair of the department. People are looking forward to see what happens next.
It's an exciting time. We're going to do some great things. We're going to transition this Department of Communication Studies into a school of global journalism and communication and put Morgan's footprint across the globe.
And well, if anybody can do it, I think you can do it. It's good to have you here.
Thank you, Mark.
And we look forward to, as down the line politically, to have you coming on as an analyst in our discussions, go back and forth with folks, and also come and do some commentary and have conversations like this as we look at the future of this nation and also as we look at where communications is going. It'd be good to have you in the studio.
Call me. I'm just down the hall.
I got you.
Good to be
Thank
here.
You, Dwayne. Thank good you. To have you here. We're going to take a very brief break. When we come back, we're going to take a look locally and talk more about the shooting that happened at Perry Hall High School, but not in terms of just the news of what happened inside the school, but what should we do? We're going to be talking with professors of psychology and the people who work with young people and our schools and students to talk about what the response should be. Should the response be more security, or are there other things we need to be thinking about in terms of how we work with our kids after things of violence? How do we stem violence before it happens? So stay with us. We'll come back with all that and more in just a few minutes.